We're still talking about Sandy Alcantara. Yes, sir, it's the Tuesday episode, but I don't care. We are still talking about Sandy Alcantara. But Sean Barrett is here, adding his expertise on today's Locked On Marlins.
You are Locked On Marlins, your daily podcast on the Miami Marlins. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings from England and welcome to Locked On Marlins, your daily Marlins podcast with me, Peter Pratt. And don't forget to follow me on Twitter at @MiamiMarlins_UK. No TikToks, no Instas. Please subscribe to the pod wherever you get them. They are free and available daily, Monday to Friday, 5 episodes a week. If you are watching, hello, greetings and welcome to my living room. It is the evening time here in the UK and I have a guest, and he is decked out, not in Marlins colours. You can tell it is Dolphins season, baby. Sean Barrett, the UK GOAT. How are we doing?
Not too bad, Pete. That was a hell of a weekend. Marlins crept in. There was a little bit of Marlins on the screens. And anytime Sandy's pitching, you know, it's well worth watching.
No doubt about it. What was your setup? What kind of setup did you go with? Because obviously Dolphins and Marlins were pretty much running in parallel for most of our evening anyway, 6 till, you know, 9.
Yeah, so Sandy got the main screen but no volume, and then the small screen with the volume. So sort of 50-50, as it were.
I like it. I like the way Sandy gets the full main screen, but no volume required. And actually, just on that, I did see a nice tweet from Rod Allen, actually, just on Monday, just saying that was his final broadcast of the year. And actually, Rod Allen, I think, was great in the booth this year. And I like the way the Marlins cycled the different guys throughout. And I think it is nice to kind of freshen it up. What was your take on, not just on Rod, but like how they... the approach that Bally took in kind of cycling the analyst into this one?
Yeah, sometimes it was a bit of a concerning, the idea that you've got so many voices, you've got so many different approaches, that it could feel a little bit disjointed from time to time. But no, each person brought a different thing to the table, and I really liked I liked everyone that was on the broadcast team, and I'd be happy for them to take that same approach next year. You know, it's something different, isn't it, rather than having the same voices every night. And you know, that's not a negative, but it certainly just gives you a little fresh voice, and every time you see a different game with a different voice, you know you're getting something, you know, it freshens it up a little bit, as it were.
Yeah, it definitely does. I really liked it, and to your point, all of the guys I enjoyed that joined Paul, and I mean Paul is absolutely phenomenal as well at what he does, for sure. And it's probably, you know, adds complexity for him, the fact that there's different guys, different styles, you're trying to find, you know, who's talking when and kind of find your groove and whatever. But nevertheless, I think that they played and worked well. And like I said, saw Rod Allen tweeting. It was a nice tweet. And, you know, again, thought he did well in the booth. It's funny that you had no volume anyway, so you wouldn't have been able to hear Rod. But I can tell you he was absolutely waxing lyrical about Sandy all through Sunday. No doubt about that. Before we get into Marlins and Sandy, because I know, you know, I covered it yesterday on the episode, just how obviously dominating Sandy was. But let's talk about Dolphins briefly, mate. I mean, you're obviously a fan, a UK-based Dolphins and Marlins fan, and a long-standing one at that. Try and describe to me the emotions that you were going through in that fourth quarter, or in that game in general, from a Dolphins perspective, because it was an absolute wild one, no doubt.
Yeah, so I started following the Marlins in 2003, and the Dolphins came a little bit later than that, a couple of years after that. But both teams, for a very long time, haven't given me much to get excited about. And so, yeah, this is the first time that the Dolphins have felt exciting. And yeah. I was texting another friend of mine who's a big fan and saying, I think they're good, but I know they're exciting. And that's kind of even more important, because we've been through many years where the games are 13 to 20 and there's no excitement. And you know that ultimately they're going to end up being 6 and 10 or 7 and 9 or 8 and 8. Mm. That's where they've sat, that years of mediocrity. So for them to have an exciting offense and to want to turn the game on and be excited by this team is something that's new to me anyway.
No doubt. Have you always been a Tua believer, by the way? Because he is, and I'm not a Dolphins fan, but I am an NFL fan, but I'm not a Dolphins fan, so I'm not as patched into Dolphins coverage, Dolphins Twitter, but boy, oh boy, he's a Marmite guy is how I describe him. You know, some people love him, some people really hate him. Where do you sit on Tua?
You're not allowed to be in the middle, are you? It's very black and white.
It's one or the other.
You think he's a Hall of Fame quarterback, or you think he's a bum. And ultimately, that's where he is, isn't it? He's in that middle ground. Like, you can't decide either way. And does he need to be elite for the Dolphins to make the playoffs and be a good team? I don't think so. I think they've got the offensive pieces, the offensive weapons now. They've given him that opportunity. And the defense, it's hard to see a defense go from year to year to year and consistently be good, because it just doesn't work that way. But they do seem to still have that relatively decent defense. They didn't show it so much against Baltimore, but, sometimes that's difficult when you've got an absolute stud quarterback on the other side of the field. So I think ultimately the team can be successful if Tua is just okay.
It's funny, and welcome to Locked On Dolphins, by the way, for those tuning in now. You can see, this is, I can flex it. If you need me to flex it, guys, I can flex into football, no problem. We can get into some Dolphins. And they are they're my second team, because everyone on my Twitter timeline is following the Dolphins. And so I am now fully patched into it. I'm seeing everything, seeing every opinion. And I want to give opinions, you know me. So, of course, I want to be involved too. Nevertheless, this is an interesting wrinkle now, mate, because, and I wasn't going to talk about this at all, but now we've been speaking, my mind is kind of taking me there. There's a couple of parallels to the Marlins here, which I think is very interesting, where what have we been saying all year? We don't need the offense, from a Marlins perspective, to be elite. The pitching's so good, we need them to be middle of the road. And actually, really, that's what the Dolphins need from Tua. If Tua's a middle of the road quarterback, and right now, after 2 weeks, he definitely isn't middle of the road, but let's expect a little bit of regression from a 6 TD game and 450 yards or whatever it might have been. So the Marlins equally, they were just looking for middle of the road. In the end, they didn't get it, and they definitely didn't get it in the end. And once Jazz went down, they really didn't get it. They became the worst offense by some way. However, that being said, the wrinkle, the thought I had is, how much of a difference is this new coach making? Like, I know they've added a few weapons, obviously Tyreek Hill being one of them, clearly. But the head coach, for me, the philosophy, the way that they're playing football now is very different. Right guys in the right spots to make the right plays, utilizing their abilities. All of a sudden, head coach, it looks a nice fit. It does kind of shine a light on it that, sometimes you have to be brave from a Marlins perspective. If you haven't, they've sat there and kind of let it ride with Donnie for multiple years. I think we're going to see that next season with the Marlins, though, where the manager is different. And I'm very intrigued to see, because I think a lot of the same guys are going to be around personally. I'm very intrigued to see what happens. But from a Dolphins perspective, how big's this coaching change been?
Absolutely, it's been massive. And I think in football, you've got more of an opportunity because, they bring in a scheme and they bring in a profile of how they want to play. But one thing that has been interesting is seeing him speak and seeing the players respond to that idea of him saying, this is why I say adversity is an opportunity, because no matter how far we're down, we've always got a chance to come back. And instilling that kind of sort of attitude and giving the players confidence even when things aren't going well and being able to turn things around, that's just what we've not seen this year. So bringing in a new coach, I don't think it's going to make as big of a difference as it has done for the Dolphins in football, but bringing that fresh voice, because that's what a manager in baseball does to me. They're so tied now, Major League Baseball teams, to the analytics and how the lineup should be set and when to go for it, when to even just, advancing the guy around third. That's all done in a calculator kind of way. So to me, the head coach or the manager of a baseball team is more about the personality and how he, how he builds that sort of environment in the clubhouse. And Donnie's been great. But you could argue that he's a little bit vanilla. And he's great at steadying the ship when things are bad. But as far as building towards a playoff team and having that excitement, I mean, I've seen you posting a few things here and there with teams that are going into the playoffs, they're 90-win teams, and you see the excitement, you see the enjoyment that they're having, and it's been a long time since we've seen that at the Marlins. Now, the losing doesn't help, obviously, but I think you have to have a winner's attitude, you have to have a winning environment before you can be ready to go and actually win the games.
Yeah, agreed. And I always felt that Derek Jeter brought that mentality. It was clear to see, like, that's all he's ever known. And it was almost like this, like, expectation of excellence. It's not quite the right language. You don't think he used that terminology. But when Jeter ever spoke, it was always, the bar is so high. The expectations are so high. And I'm very intrigued, like you, you know, the whole manager situation, how much of an influence they have these days, etc. But what they are, they're in the locker room, in the clubhouse daily, speaking to the guys daily. And that's there. They become people managers. They almost become shrinks, to be honest with you. They become psychologists, because so much of baseball, hitting-wise, I believe, is in the head. It's so in the head. And we saw that with Coop, where he kind of got in his own head and it went too far, and he completely lost it. And what we need is, you know, maybe a different voice, a different approach, a different type of G'ing guys up, a different type of trying to get them out of funks. I don't know, but Donnie's been there a long time. It's clearly run its course. They have to make the right call, the Marlins. It's going to be a very intriguing call to see what they do in terms of replacing him. But, you know, and we've seen that football for years, you know, head coaches come and go, it flames, it can happen. But I think for the Dolphins, they've made a real nice call. I think the Marlins equally, they have a big decision to make, and we hope they can. And I'm intrigued to see what type of personality they go for and how much of a people guy they are, and a rah-rah guy as well, because that's certainly something that Donnie hasn't been. He's very, like you said, he's mellow, steady Eddie, which over 162 is probably okay. But I want to see a bit of emotion from time to time. The fans want to see the emotion too, don't we? Like, that's it. We want to see when things are going wrong, we want to see, you know, chairs being thrown and, you know, all this kind of stuff going on, because that's how we feel, and we want to feel that they care. And at times, you know, you get a bit too vanilla and it gets a bit like, do they care? Which as fans is something we don't really want to be seeing, but I don't know. Anyway, first ad, then we'll get into Sandy. We're already into the first ad. We've got a whole Dolphin segment there that somehow segued into the Marlins and Don Mattingly. Absolutely not planned. So, nevertheless. Anyway, guys, delighted to mention and bring this episode to you by our good friends over at LinkedIn. And yes, if you are watching, you can see we have some graphics as well. We got some new graphics. Look at these bad boys. So, getting a bit carried away with the graphics. Anyway, these days, every new potential hire can feel like a high-stakes wager for your small business. The same can be said for the Marlins and their managerial hire, perhaps. You want to be 100% certain that you have access to the best qualified candidates available. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs helps find the right people for your team faster and for free. You can add your job and the purple hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile to spread the word that you're hiring. It's so easy to create this job post on LinkedIn Jobs. And then you've got simple tools like screening questions that make it easy to focus on the candidates with just the right skills and experience, so you can quickly prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. It's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs help you to find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. You can post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonMLB. That is linkedin.com/lockedonMLB to post your job for free. Terms and conditions do apply. Stunning graphics as well, by the way. Okay, Sean, Sandy Alcantara. Sandy, baby, we haven't even spoken about it. We're 15 minutes in a 25-minute podcast. Nevertheless, feel it's the right time to put over to you and say, Sandy Alcantara, Sean Stats, it feels like a great time to bring these two together. What have you got for me?
Well, I'm just not bored of talking about Sandy. I mean,
no.
Earlier in the day, you know, are we gone? Yes, we're on. Okay, we're talking Sandy, aren't we? Yeah, because what else are we going to talk about?
Absolutely.
I mean, he's just great, isn't he? 9 innings, complete game, you know, and complete games, we just don't see that very much. So the stat I've got for you, and I'm sure most people at this point have already seen it, but 5 complete games this year, first pitcher to have 5 complete games since 2017. This is just something that we don't often see. There are 15 teams in Major League Baseball this year that don't have a single complete game. And Sandy has 5. He equates for 17% of the complete games in baseball this year.
Wow.
He's an absolute throwback. Innings pitched, you know, we talked about how far ahead he is of everyone this year. And he is massively far ahead. But this isn't new for us. This is just something that we're starting to realise. We always knew he went long. But 2022, most innings pitched. Combine that with 2021, most. Combine that from 2020 to 2022, the most. 2019 to 2022, the most. He is just an absolute ace. When Sandy goes on the mound, you know he's going deep. He's averaging over 7 innings a start this year, for the whole year.
Wow.
So when you see him pitchers struggling to go 6, from, you know, every single time, he's going 7 at least every single time. Sandy is, to me, the de facto Cy Young winner, and it isn't even close. This guy is elite. And the fact that the Marlins have him for many years on, he's now 3rd in pitching war by Marlins pitchers ever. And by the time he's finished, he's going to be atop that list, and there's going to be a big old gap.
Is it possible that Sandy Alcantara is perhaps the first Marlin to have his jersey retired? I mean, it's a few years off, but they haven't pulled the trigger on anyone yet in the organization. Is it possible, once Sandy is done, and let's assume that he plays out the majority, if not all, of this contract, Sandy Alcantara is the first? It's number 22. I've said that like with slight caution, but I'm 95%. It's 22. The number 22 is retired, and it's the first Marlins jersey ever. What do you think? It's possible, right?
It's not only possible, but it needs to happen, doesn't it? You know, the Marlins haven't got a single number retired, apart from Jackie Robinson, obviously, number 42. But an actual Marlins player, not a single player. And between now and 10 years' time, is there a player in the... I mean, there's Jazz, but we need to see many, many more years of production before we even start that conversation. So at the moment, Sandy's the only person that's on the roster that's got any chance at all. And yeah, if he pitches anywhere close to this, ends up being the best pitcher by war or whatever statistic you want to use by the end of his career, then yeah, I mean, if it's not going to be Sandy, how long are we going to wait to see another generational player like Sandy? Because they don't come around very often.
They definitely don't. Just let's look ahead to 2023 briefly. How confident are you that we will get a similar, if not better, knowing Sandy Alcantara too, a similar, if not better, year out of him in 2023 for the Marlins? How confident are you at this stage?
We spoke about this earlier in the year, the idea that every year he gets better, and that I stopped expecting that not to happen. Because if he ends up being a Cy Young winner, can we honestly say, of course he's going to be better next year? But if you look at the way he approaches the game, where we had Mel on the broadcast a couple of games ago, where he's talking about Sandy's not happy with this or that, and we feel like, you know, sometimes he's a bit too amped up. He still thinks he's got stuff he can work on. He's still got stuff he wants to work on. He could sit back and go, I'm going to be the Cy Young winner. I can do whatever I want and be great. He's still working on it. He's still working on his slider. He still thinks he's got room to grow on that. So the fact that he's still there, as elite as he is, going, I need to get better at that, and I need to get better at this, especially when he's already got paid, that's amazing.
Agreed. What was your reaction when you heard the post-game comments from Sandy saying that he felt after 3 pitches he could go a complete game? I mean, that is some serious comment there, right there. Sandy is out there just, he's almost, he must be able to feel it. The ball must come out right and he's like, I'm on today. I'm on. These Nats haven't got a chance. There's a good chance of a CG. I mean, great comments from Sandy there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you know, when you're a pitcher, and you're throwing your stuff, every now and then you hear about a guy who goes, oh, I didn't really feel very comfortable with my slider or getting control with whatever pitch I was using. So I didn't use it that much today. So when you've got all your pitches working for you, you know straight away. And when you're facing a lineup like the Nationals, that's the kind of attitude you want to be having, isn't it? I'm going to go 9 today. I've got these guys' number. You know?
Yeah.
And for him to do it is, to almost cool his shot internally. That's kind of cool.
It really is. He did run into some trouble in the 8th. We have to call that out. And I was thinking, oh boy, here we go. Because one of the last times that he went deep into a game, the wheels slightly fell off in that too. I was thinking, oh boy, please no, Sandy. He managed to navigate the traffic, which he always does, typically with double plays and whatnot. But, it was a vintage Sandy performance. It was just amazing, the efficiency. It was like 10 or less pitches just over and over and over again. It was insane to watch. The only fly in the ointment that I see looking ahead to 23, if I think about it, is what would the impact be if Mel Stottlemyre isn't around next year, from a coach, a pitching and a coaching perspective? For me, I would be concerned if they were to make a change there, because just the combination of Mel Stottlemyre, Sandy Alcantara, and let's call it out, it'd be wrong not to mention it, but Jacob Stallings and the impact he's had. He's caught every single one of Sandy Alcantara's pitches and games this year. Those three combined, this is the result you're seeing. If you take one of those guys out with Mel Stottlemyre, how big of an impact that could have on Sandy. For me, that's a big concern I have. I hope they can get a deal done, but what's your sense on that one?
I mean, it's so important, isn't it? It's a case of, I don't think money is probably what's going to turn it. I think it probably is just whether or not Mel still wants to do it in Miami, still wants to do it at the major league level. I know that Mish has reported a few bits and pieces or spoken about how maybe he wants to go back to college, or he could theoretically walk into any job he wants. But if it would come down to money, then the Marlins just need to sign a blank check and go, there you go, Mel. Whatever you want to be here for the next 3, 5, 7 years, we're doing it. Stallings, yeah, you're right. I mean, the bat has been a little bit disappointing, and the defense hasn't quite been as good as maybe we were expecting. But I think he's still done enough for the fact that what other options do the Marlins have? I think Stallings is still going to be that starting catcher in 2023. Obviously, you've got the arbitration year, so as long as if the Marlins want him, he can't go anywhere. That he's almost locked in for them. So I think Sandy, he should have a voice in this as well. Yeah. If I'm Sandy and I've got that cachet and I'm going to be the Cy Young winner and I'm your best player, I'm turning around to whoever I need to speak to and say, look, Mel needs to be here, and just do it. Go and do what you need to do. This guy is the second best guy in the organization. I'm number one. He's number two. He's got to stay.
Exactly. I mean, surely this shouldn't be news to the Marlins front office that Mel Stottlemyre should be extended. I guess it's just going to come down to, and I think the reality of the whole situation for Mel is, I guess he needs to work out what he's committing to. And I think the fact that the Don Mattingly era is going to end from a manager perspective anyway, I think that's very clear. And I think from Mel's perspective, he's probably trying to work out who's coming in and do they want him? Is there going to be the connection there? Because you know the drill, right? New guy comes in, hey, I want this coach and that coach. They'd be a fool to come in. If their first act would be to come in and go, hey, listen, I don't want to work with Mel Stottlemyre, then boy, oh boy, I don't know what that would say. However, I do think that's probably where Mel's head's at is, let's see what we're working with. If we're happy, we're comfortable, we all have a warm, fuzzy feeling, Sandy Alcantara will be there saying, I want him. Of course, everyone there will be saying, I want Mel. I think they'll get a deal done. I think they will, and I think he will be extended. One final one on the pitching side, then we'll get out of here because we have run long. We've talked Dolphins and Sandy, which, took us long. I want to talk about Trevor Rogers, who news broke on Monday, so yesterday, that Trevor's done for the year. Not a surprise he exited the game after 1 1/3 work. His velo was way down and ended up exiting with a lat strain. It ended up being a grade 1 lat strain, and effectively that ends Trevor Rogers' year. I'm first on the injury. I'm pleased to hear that it is something like that. for me, when he exited, you know, you're thinking, oh, is it shoulder? Is it arm? Is it elbow? No, lat. Okay, best case probably in many ways. So that's some way heartening, do you think, Sean, in terms of the actual injury that Trevor's had there?
Oh, 100%. You know, when a pitcher goes down and the velo's down and, you know, he's almost immediately he's pulled from the game, it is that sense of your mind starts to wonder, doesn't it? Is it Tommy John? Are we going to lose him for basically all the years of his arbitration are now going to be, you know, injury and recovery? So a lat strain, you know, I don't want to have a lat strain, that's for certain. But, you know, there is nothing in that injury at all that would speak to any issues going into the new year. So if you're going to have an injury and it's going to be a season ender, have it be when they've only got one or two starts left for the season, and have it be an injury that in the end really isn't too much to worry about. You know, that's not going to be an off-season discussion, is it? Is Trevor going to be healthy come spring training? No, that injury has got nothing to do with any concerns for next year, and that's all we can ask for.
You say that. You say that, however, on yesterday's episode, I talked about this as well. And this is a loaded question, so I'll try to be careful. I don't want to, you know, take you into a spot you don't want to get into. But, you know, can we actually trust what the Marlins tell us about injury reports these days? Because I've got to be honest, there's been so many injury reports that have come out. And at the time, you have this conversation. We've had this before. We had the same conversation about Lizardo, Jazz, Wendell, Avi. It's fine. Miss a start or two. Back in the minimum stay. And it never transpires to go that way. Sixto, I mean, we all know what's happened with Sixto. The question I'm saying is, can we actually trust what the Marlins are telling us here? Are they just going to put out and say it's a lat strain, season's done. Okay, cool. It's under, you know, you kind of go into the offseason feeling okay about it. I don't know. There's just, I don't know, and I'm not close enough to the detail, obviously, but there's too many instances now where the initial prognosis is something and you feel okay about it, and then the actual is completely the opposite and the time frame is way longer. And so I don't know if they're doing this on purpose or not, but I don't know. What's your take on that generally? Like I said, it's a little bit loaded, so I'll be careful with it. But
it is. And I mean, I think, you know, most of those injuries, you kind of, they aren't too big of a concern. But because we've had that Sixto situation where, you know, he's been thrown from 32 and a third feet for the last 18 months, and the fact that for a long period of time they weren't saying anything, and it was a case of, is it just that you're not telling us, or is it just that you don't actually know? And then we've had the Jazz surgery this week, which came as a bit of a surprise, an injury that apparently he'd been niggling with all year until it finally became an issue. And again, we didn't really get a lot of information about that. And the fact that he was swinging at the All-Star game made me think, did they know as well? You know, so it isn't. My concern isn't that they're not telling us the truth. It's that they don't actually know the truth from time to time when it comes to their players, which is super troubling. And I mean, that's a Metsian kind of thing to have, because that tends to happen with them and their pitching. This guy's only going to be out for 4 weeks and they don't see him for 2 years. You know, it is a case of, you've got to get this stuff right. Like, I can accept a team not hitting well and not scoring runs, but not knowing the full condition of the health of your players, that's a major red flag.
Agreed. That's exactly the pathway I went down yesterday. Was, are they not telling, or they just not know? And then they're not getting the right test done at the early stages, and then they stumble upon it later down the line. The point being, with Jazz's back, where he's swinging a bat, and then they send him for a scan. It's like, well, hold on a minute, send him for the scan at the start when he goes on the IL, clearly. And then lo and behold, he goes for this scan and they realize there's a stress fracture in his back. Oh, and actually there's a torn meniscus as well. And we won't tell anyone about that. That can just, you know, we'll just drop that in there in September when no one's watching. Nevertheless, that's going to do us for Tuesday's episode of Locked On Marlins. That has been a lot of Dolphins talk, guys, so I hope you've enjoyed it. And just a reminder, guys, there is also a Locked On Dolphins. If you're not listening, you should be. It's an absolutely stunning show, and I'm sure the listens and subscribers they're booming right now, no doubt about it. I've also hit subscribe on the YouTube channel. That's how bought into the Dolphins I am now. Sean Barrett, as always, the UK GOAT. I appreciate hopping on. And here's the good news, guys. Wednesday's episode, yes, tomorrow, Sean Barrett is back. It's a two-episode week for Sean Barrett. You can tell it's been a bank holiday weekend here in the UK. So that's going to wrap us for Tuesday. But tomorrow, guys, Me and Sean, straight back in the saddle. We'll see you tomorrow.